Neil and David, and this is our newest podcast where we're talking to local leaders in the community. As mentioned in the last roundtable discussion podcast, this first episode will be honoring the legacies of several individuals who played key roles in the civil rights movement. Today, we have the privilege to be joined by Pastor Lois Waters and her husband, Don Waters, for this discussion. Waters are two local leaders and activists in the Chambersburg community, and we'll let them speak a little more about the work they do in the community here in a second. Mr. and Mrs. Waters, how are the both of you today?
We're doing well, thanks.
That's great to hear. Well, thank you both for joining us once again. Tell us a little bit about yourselves and what you both do.
Well, I'm a retired university manager. I worked at Shippensburg University, and I'm also a full-time pastor for almost 20 years. I am really from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, but was raised here from the age of 7. So I'm a product of the community and, you know, graduated from Chambersburg High School. And then I went on to go to Washington, D.C., worked, got my education, and in 1980 returned back home. So I've been back in Chambersburg for quite a while. Yeah. We're also we have four children. So we have a blended family. We lost two of our sons, and we have 10 grandchildren and 9 great-grandchildren. So we stay pretty busy.
Yeah, I definitely get that. Sounds like it. Well, like I said, thank you both for joining us here once again. Today, we're going to be honoring the legacies of two individuals who passed away on July 17th. And the first of those individuals was Congressman John Lewis, who was a towering figure in the civil rights era. He dedicated his life to protecting human rights, securing civil liberties, and building what he called the beloved community in America. As a young boy, he was inspired by the activism surrounding the Montgomery bus boycott and the words of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. As a college student, Lewis organized sit-in demonstrations at segregated lunch counters in Nashville. He was also one of the original Freedom Riders who challenged segregated interstate travel in the South. And, you know, after facing numerous arrests and physical beatings, such as the one at the march from Selma to Montgomery or Bloody Sunday, John Lewis continued to be a lifelong activist, most notably through his lengthy tenure representing Atlanta in the U.S. House of Representatives. Another prominent civil rights figure who passed away on the same day was Reverend C.T. Vivian, who served as a close advisor to Martin Luther King and throughout his life maintained the same message that change must come and nonviolent direct action is necessary to bring it about. He was a very firm believer in nonviolent protests. So, Mr. and Mrs. Waters, describe the time when you first became aware of the work that men like John Lewis and C.T. Vivian were doing to advocate for civil rights. You know, how did you view these men, and did that kind of change over time?
When I first became aware was actually when I was in college at Morgan State University in a Black history class. The professor was actually teaching about these two gentlemen, and honestly, I knew very little, if nothing, about them, mainly because of this area. Those things really weren't taught in this area, so that was like a whole new world to me in terms of what Blacks did then and up to that point. So I was really excited and very interested in what was going on and what Blacks had done.
I'm similar to my husband in that I really was not familiar with C.T. Vivian at all. That's not a name that I'd heard. John Lewis I became more familiar with when he started the sit-ins and the Freedom Rides, because we would hear a little bit about that on the news, but very little. Most of the focus that we would hear around in this area was centered around mostly around what Dr. King was doing. So the names that I was more familiar with were Andrew Young and Abernathy and Jesse Jackson. But, and like I said, John Lewis, but actually even more with John Lewis later when he became a congressman, when we heard a lot more about John Lewis and his work with the Black Caucus.
Don, I think something that you said that was really interesting was kind of how the main reason that you weren't as familiar with these two men was because of the area, because I feel the exact same way. I was not familiar with C.T. Vivian at all before his passing, but John Lewis I hadn't learned anything about until I actually went to college. Have the teachings of these men influenced your views of leadership or your conduct as leaders?
I think it affirms what I believe in as a leader to be. Both of these gentlemen, from what I've actually read about Vivian, because I was not familiar with Reverend Vivian, but they led by example. They weren't trying to tell other folk what to do. And they got out there and demonstrated. So they were willing to put their lives on the line to do exactly what they were asking other people to do. And I think a true leader is one who leads by example. You know, the cliche that we have, they don't just talk the talk, but they walk the walk. And that's very important.
And I think that the biggest thing is, as my wife said, is that they led by example. And we need to have individuals that would be role models for us and for the youth of today that would show them how to do things, not just talk about it, but actually show them what it means to be a leader.
That kind of segues really well into my next question, examining the two times. You know, from your perspectives, how does the civil rights movement of the mid-20th century compare to the Black Lives Matter movement and, you know, other activism that we see today?
The comparison is that they are both dealing with the same issue. They're using Black Lives Matters now as the overarching or the umbrella. But with John Lewis and all of the other civil rights leaders, without that language, that's exactly what it was saying. Not that Black lives are more important than other lives, but that those lives ought to be considered in the overall thrust of things. I think it was Dr. King who let us know that none of us are free until all of us are free. So it was an all-inclusive effort. So I see it as being the same, almost identical. You're still trying to achieve equality. Now it's expanded. What I'm really, really impressed with, when we, in the mid-20th century, or the civil rights movement that we are, under Dr. King, it was an integrated movement. This movement has far exceeded. It was mostly Black and white. Now we see what the United States represents. We see all nationalities, all folks of various interests coming together. And I am just so amazed, because all of these folks have come together and on one accord, in my opinion, everybody's focused on particular things, particular issues, getting rid of, eradicating racism. It seems like they're saying in this day, enough. We've had enough. It's time to end this foolishness. We make strides, we stop, and then we come back with the same kind of stuff. It's enough. And these young people, the other comparison is that they were young people back in the day, and they're young people today who are leading the movement. One of the things, though, that is different, in my opinion, is that the movement in the past was led by the church. The civil rights movement came out of the church. There were pastors who organized. It was a movement that originated out of the church. This movement did not originate out of the church. In fact, in my opinion, I think the church has followed behind, has not been on the forefront of it. So the church is like catching up. But regardless, these young people are moving, not just in this country, but, you know, with other countries across the water, are doing the same thing, all on marching on one accord, and they're sustaining. They are sustaining, and they are practicing the nonviolence. So there's the other thing, because violence with violence doesn't get you anywhere. It is being able to maintain a nonviolence position, even though that nonviolent position may often be faced with violence, and they're holding their line, and I'm just so proud of them. I even have a granddaughter was out there on the line, so I really am.
Yeah, it does seem that, you know, it's the youth that are powering these movements, that are powering the change, and that's so great to see. Here at I-117, we aim to talk about activism with young people, especially kind of how to help young people get involved in activism, especially whenever they feel like they might not have an outlet or anywhere to kind of start, like youth in an area like this, if they don't feel like they have an outlet. What should young people, especially young people hoping to start getting involved in activism, what do you think that they should take from the legacies of these men?
I think the first thing is really they need to study them to understand what it is that they did and what they went through. Because I think the biggest issue is how their approach to everything. And the nonviolence. And that's probably the hardest thing to learn. And I would say with the youth today, they would rather fight first or react first and be calm later. And I think that they could learn something from those individuals, these two individuals, as well as all of them. But as C.T. Vivian and John Lewis, how they handle themselves, I think that that would be very appropriate for them to understand.
I think one of the things that our young people can learn from them is the fact that one must persevere. It's not something that's going to be a quick fix. And I think in my generation that in the movement, we achieved some things. We made some inroads. There were some milestones accomplished, but we did not achieve the complete objective, which was to secure complete equality in all aspects of life. And so sometimes I think, and when I look back over the years, I think we became complacent in that we had made some inroads and we became comfortable. Because you can, you know, we could work, you know, different jobs were open now that had not been opened. We could go to schools where we had not been able to go to schools before and that kind of thing. But we didn't keep pressing on. There were some in the background, but not. And the other thing I think that kind of maybe have stopped us a little bit is that we had no defined leader, really, after Dr. King that could really galvanize everyone. When I heard Dr. King on the TV, had never seen him alive, I was so inspired as a young woman to want to get out there and do something. And I'm just going to add this little side note, because you know there was a difference. There was a difference between being in the North and being in the South. In the North, we had the facade, if you will, of believing that there was equality when there was not equality. We could go into some restaurants, but you could not be served. We could go and purchase items, even in this community, in some stores, but we couldn't work in those stores. We could go to, you know, like the carryout on Wade Avenue, Stoner's, and buy ice cream or whatever, but you could not work there. And that was understood. And I think we had self-imposed kind of boundaries, if you will, that we didn't cross certain lines. We knew when we went to the movies, you couldn't sit downstairs. We had to sit upstairs. Those were given things. And so even I believe, among those of us who were African-American Blacks in the North, looked at it as though all of the trouble was in the South. And so I think what we learn, or what our young people need to learn, is regardless of where we are geographically, whatever, you know, our experiences are, we are one in terms of the needs that we have, regardless of whether it's blatant or not. In the South, it was much more blatant. In the North, if the racism was there, it was just kind of kept under wraps, if you will, in the sense that we didn't see the beatings and that kind of stuff, or the signs, whites only, blacks only kind of thing. And so we looked at it as only a problem in one area, but the problem of racism permeates every area. And our young people, I believe, understand that now, and they are not letting go of the bone, I think.
One of the things that I thought that you said was most interesting was how it's not a quick fix, and it's certainly not an easy fix. And I think that that's really essential, especially for young people that are just starting out to become activists, to prevent burnout. You know, you see a lot on social media about continuing the movement after the news cycle, after, you know, other social medias. You don't see it as much on that. It's essential to kind of keep the movement going and keep momentum rolling. To conclude, what would you recommend people to do here locally to honor these men and what they worked for and to kind of continue the fight?
You know, our votes matter. That's our voice. And I think sometimes we get complacent or apathetic about it because we don't see the change that we want to see as quickly as we want to see it. And so folks get frustrated. But the vote is what will make a difference. And we need to educate ourselves, and we need to encourage our young people to get to know the individuals who are running for office, to know what they stand for, what their platforms are, so that you know whether or not those individuals are in line with where you want to be and what you feel needs to change in your communities. And not to think that any office is insignificant, because all offices matter. In our local communities, our state, and the national arena, we need to get out and have our votes matter. And I think that, you know, our young people need to encourage one another to get out and to vote. And I think that was, they will begin to see that that's where change will really come, to exercise the rights that others fought and died for, that we might have, so that we have a voice.
in the voting, your vote does matter. And you can't go around saying my vote's not going to make a difference, because if they studied any history, one vote is what got Hitler in power, and one vote is what really got Abraham Lincoln elected. No, you need to know your history. You need to know where you are coming from before you can move forward. And if you don't know that, you're not going to move. And the other thing is also to be patient. You need to be patient. As Lois said, nothing's going to happen overnight. And in today's world, everything has to happen right away. And they have to learn patience and be able to persevere, because it's a long road. It's been going on for over 100 years, and it still hasn't, we still haven't reached the equality, the racial equality that is needed, just as it says in the Constitution, that all men and women are created equal. That's not the case, because it's never been that way. It's only been that way for white men.
Really, I think voting, learning, and educating yourself on these matters is so important. And I do agree that I think young people encouraging each other is really how you make a difference with that too, because one of the things that Ross and I talked about when we were starting this group out is how we thought that it becomes easier to do things like getting out and voting and getting out into activism whenever students see their peers doing it also and encouraging them to get involved. So I think that that's really great. Those were all the questions that we had prepared. Thank you both again for taking time out of your busy schedule to sit down and have a chat with us. I really loved what you both had to say. And I think it's very inspiring what you both had to say. And I think it's really great what you two are doing for this community. So thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you both.
Have a good one.
You too.